loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by co-host John Kiriakou. In this hour, we focus on the conclusion of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into alleged Russian collusion with the 2016 Trump campaign. A summary of the report was made public over the weekend. The New York Times banner headline this morning captured the essence of the report. It reads, "Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy." What does this mean for the future of the Trump White House, for the 2020 election campaign, for the Democratic Party, which focused its opposition to Trump largely on this conspiracy theory rather than his other policies? And what does it mean for politics in the United States and for the international situation?
But before we get to those stories, we'll go over today's headlines. Celebrity lawyer Michael Avenatti was arrested today and charged with extortion. He allegedly attempted to coerce Nike into giving him $20 million in exchange for not releasing damaging information about the company. Avenatti has inserted himself into national politics in recent years by representing Stormy Daniels in her case against Donald Trump. Mike Pence denounced Democrats who are skipping AIPAC's annual conference, a high-profile event that regularly draws the highest-ranking politicians in the country. This year, many candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination are skipping the conference in response to a grassroots campaign launched in response to the Islamophobic attacks on Representative Ilhan Omar. Pence said, quote, "Anyone who aspires to the highest office in the land should not be afraid to stand with the strongest supporters of Israel in America." A fourth Kurdish prisoner being held in Turkey committed suicide, according to officials from the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party. Prisoner Medya Çınar hanged herself to protest the conditions of jailed Kurdish leader Abdullah Öcalan. A hunger strike started 140 days ago in protest of these conditions, and three other prisoners killed themselves in that time span. The head of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, Elhaj Asi, said, quote, "We are sitting on a ticking time bomb," unquote, a waterborne disease in the area of southeastern Africa that was hit by Cyclone Idai on March 15th. These include cholera, typhus, and malaria. Humanitarian aid right now is focused on food, shelter, and temporary infrastructure repairs. U.S. envoy to North Korea Stephen Biegun is in Beijing for talks aimed at reinvigorating the negotiations between the U.S. and the DPRK. Biegun arrived in China yesterday. The peace process has been in jeopardy since the failure of the Hanoi summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Those are today's headlines. You're listening to Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
Now we turn to the final report of Robert Mueller. The New York Times headline, at least in the hard copy, "Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy." Special Counsel Robert Mueller has completed the investigation into alleged collusion between the Russian government and the Trump campaign and has found no evidence of collusion. The final report is with Attorney General William Barr and is on its way to Congress. Mueller's finding of no collusion and no criminality on the part of the president has Democrats reeling and calling for a new congressional investigation or investigations. We're joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. Colleen is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year along with two other whistleblowers. Colleen Raleigh, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Finally, after all of this time and all of this money, the Mueller report is in. And Colleen, we can't help but be astonished because all of the people who have been telling us that we must protect Robert Mueller and his investigation and that he is the guardian of our democracy and he will deliver the final justice, they're now saying, what? So what? I mean, the Mueller report really didn't, it was too narrow, didn't get down to it. And again, it's pretty amazing. And as we mentioned to you off the, or what you mentioned to us, the flip-flop.
Absolutely. Partisanship is the story because you had the people who, back the left, especially during the Mueller 12 years as director, when he covered up 9/11 initially and rounded up innocent immigrants in New York City, then was okay with torture, then said there was WMD that would be given to terrorists in Iraq. The left, of course, and I was one of those who, you know, said, you know, Mueller has a lot of failings. But all of a sudden, when he was appointed a special counsel, that same group of people put him on a pedestal and forgot all of his bad track record. By the way, which includes plain vanilla incompetence of having targeted the wrong innocent person as being the anthrax killer. I mean, it's incredible. He's just got such a long track record, and to have forgotten all of that. And that's what the left did. They put him on a pedestal. Now they're going back the other way and saying, well, maybe he wasn't the God that we thought he was. I just have to mention one thing here, which is kind of something maybe people won't recognize, because when I wrote, you know, his track record, his major feature is sycophantic behavior. He's a political animal. And so he will always do and say things that he knows how to walk the fence. He's been in Washington. He knows this stuff. And so the part that was, you know, perhaps not surprising to some of us was that he hedged. You know, when they put him on a pedestal, they made him this Ephraim Zimbalist, square-jawed, I know right from wrong, man of integrity. And now that he is hedged and did and actually punted on this issue of obstruction of justice and let Barr do the heavy lifting and take responsibility for that, that's, you know, people say, well, that's not in league with what we were told. He was the decisive man of justice. And here he punts on the hardest, you know, on the hardest issue because he wanted to leave wiggle room for this political debate and also his cronies like Comey. He wanted to leave that wiggle room in there.
There was so much that Colleen Rowley just said that was so important and cut directly to the heart of this entire issue. Colleen, you are absolutely right. Robert Mueller was presented to the American people as the end all, the greatest investigator, the man of the highest integrity. If anybody's going to get to the bottom of this, it's going to be Robert Mueller. But Robert Mueller's career has been plagued by mistakes. And in addition to that, he's a survivor in Washington. And in order to be a survivor, you have to be a sycophant.
There's a couple issues here. Let's start to focus on them, because one issue is, was there collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia? Now, the Democrats, after James Comey was fired by Donald Trump and a special Rosenstein and the others appointed a special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, we were all, everyone was turned into spectators, basically. Instead of being in the streets opposing Donald Trump's reactionary policies on immigrations or going to the airports, everybody became, you know, spectators watching TV for Robert Mueller to come in and finally deliver the conclusive proof that Donald Trump is president of the United States, not because of the arcane electoral college, again, because he did lose by 3 million plus votes, but because of a Russian conspiracy. It was a conspiracy theory. And Colleen, right now, the headline of the New York Times, it's no longer the headline, by the way, on the online version of the Times, but the headline of the hard copy, big banner across the top of the front page, Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy. That would mean that after endless interviews and lots of money spent, there is actually no proof that there was actually collusion. That's kind of the key element to the entire thing. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yes, of course, that is the key element. And they sometimes call it collusion. Now in Mueller called it coordination. And of course, conspiracy is an actual crime, but you do have to have an underlying crime even as well with the conspiracy. And, you know, the only indictment that Mueller really came up with was the what I call clickbait, that group of Russians, whether they're even directly affiliated with the Russian government's a whole nother story. But there was some clickbait ads, a few thousand dollars worth. Actually, they didn't even jibe really with the election, but, you know, in a broad way, I guess you could say, to sow discord or whatever. And that's the best Mueller really could do on what you would actually call this little bit of quote unquote Russiagate. But our news media just ran wild with the connecting Trump and his administration to this. You know, before Mueller, we had Woodward, who had done those same interviews. He had done, I assume, quite an overlap of interviews of the same people that Mueller later interviewed. And he said some time ago, I found this, this, and this, but no collusion with the Trump administration. And our media did not even cover Woodward, who was their shining example of Watergate journalism. And when he came out with this a few months ago, it was like crickets, you know, no coverage at all. The Democrats really were forewarned that Mueller was going to do that, more of the cop out here. They had plenty of warning of this. And I think that they did, the smarter ones, Nadler and others, were able to form their fallback. And this is what you're seeing now on the news, because the news isn't ready to give up. They're not really admitting they're wrong. Maybe, like you said, they had a headline and then they change it. They quickly change it, because as soon as they can get a fallback, I watch Good Morning America now, and it was incredible that the news hosts are still, you know, challenging
Huckabee Sanders.
Huckabee Sanders, yeah. And so it's incredible. There's already a pretty well-developed fallback, and the fallback is probably what Mueller anticipated. The discrepancies between Mueller report saying, I don't exonerate Trump on obstruction, and then punting to Barr, and then Barr saying, you know, you can't really obstruct. How can you obstruct when there's no underlying crime? And then, in going back to Watergate, I think something people don't understand with Watergate is Nixon, of course, was not involved in the underlying break-in. He was only involved in the later attempted obstruction of the break-in. But you know what? In Watergate, there was a crime. There really was an underlying crime. Trying to say obstruction of justice when there really is no underlying crime. If you're trying to protect your friends or your family by obstructing, sure, absolutely. That's obstruction, even if you were not involved, as Nixon was not directly involved. But in this case, you really have a hard time even putting your finger on any underlying crime at all of an American.
That's the voice of Colleen Raleigh. She was the Time Magazine's Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers back in 2002. We're talking about the report, the Mueller report, and William Barr, the Attorney General's article or letter that was released yesterday about the report. Let's listen to an MSNBC audio clip. I mean, Rachel Maddow, you know, she's making – this has been very good for Rachel, by the way.
Oh, her ratings have skyrocketed over this.
Rachel Maddow has made $10 million a year as the vanguard of MSNBC's yes. thing. And one of our producers, Nicole, was saying that she was listening to a tape that somebody else had made where in one program – Rachel Maddow mentioned the word Russian or Russians or Russian conspiracy like, I don't know, 10 million times. Anyway, this isn't Rachel Maddow, but it's another person on MSNBC. And this is, again, Colleen, interesting about the spin now that Mueller has come out. And as the New York Times said, Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy. Let's listen to this audio clip because, again, this is the anti-Trump station spinning.
Mueller's remit was always rather narrow. I disagree with the congressman in one respect. Mueller was asked to look at Russian interference in the 2016 election. Nobody asked Mueller to rummage through Trump's attic. And so we know the Southern District of New York investigation continues. We know that the president, for instance, was identified in public court filings as having directed illegal campaign finance payments. We know other people were involved in that. We know that Cohn and Flynn and Gates and others continue to cooperate. We see large amounts of redacted portions in recent public court filings. Stuff is still happening. Even if the Mueller team doesn't indict and prosecute anyone else, I'm still quite certain, like I said earlier, that others should not be celebrating just yet.
Okay, Colleen, this seems like disingenuous spin to me, because the purpose of the Mueller probe was about the fundamental allegation that Donald Trump is president of the United States right now because there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's a serious charge. The Democrats have likened that to an act of war. Here you have the Mueller report after all of this money, all of these subpoenas, all of these interviews coming back and saying no Russia-Trump conspiracy. In other words, saying that the media story is untrue. And so now you have MSNBC saying, oh, well, Robert Mueller was only, he had a narrow focus. Let's get into illegal campaign financing for hush money. Or there was lots of redacted testimony. That might be the grounds for more investigations. Or Flynn and Gates are still cooperating, which to me is like, okay, so what?
Yeah.
Again, it seems to me this isn't going to end, because what basically has happened is that the criminal justice system has been used to fight a partisan political battle. Perhaps it's been bad for the, I think it's been very, very bad for the country, bad for politics. It certainly has been bad in terms of U.S.-Russian relations. They've gotten much, much worse, even under Trump. Anyway, Colleen, 1 minute left, your final take.
Absolutely. So dangerous beyond belief with nuclear superpowers now in this state of heightened Cold War. And that's the real danger. You know, if you remember that the Steele dossier is what started this all, unbelievable, you know, nonsense that was concocted in a couple of weeks and paid for by the DNC. The FBI never verified it, puts it into a FISA surveillance order for over a year. I mean, these are the problems that should be investigated. I wish Mueller would actually, I wish it would spin into something like that, where they really would try to address and the media would own up to its mistakes. I wish that maybe opening the door of all of the foreign lobbying, failure to register as foreign lobbyists, there's some good that could come out of this investigation. But on the balance of what it's done to our foreign policy and warmongering, et cetera, it's been very, very dangerous and negative for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, Colleen is just straight on here. Those are the important points. There is a lot of collusion. You can look at Israel. You can look at Saudi Arabia. You can look at lots of interference by foreign governments. And again, basically misleading the country in a terrible way. And again, John, you know, we've been hammered in this show because we do this show every day. So we've been looking at it, and people have been saying, oh, you guys are jumping off the cliff by saying that there's no evidence of collusion. We said, well, so far there's no evidence of collusion.
And I'm glad we were so consistent about that.
Yeah, we've been hammered for it. But actually, Robert Mueller now says no Trump Russia conspiracy. You've been listening to Colleen Raleigh. Colleen is a former FBI special agent. In 2002, Colleen was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. Now we continue our coverage of the release of the special counsel Robert Mueller's report on collusion allegations. We'll discuss what's next for the president, for congressional Democrats and congressional Republicans, and for the mainstream media that fell all over itself to make accusations before there was evidence to back them up. Gareth Porter joins us in the studio. Gareth is a historian, investigative journalist, and analyst. And we're joined from New York by Ted Rawl. Ted is an award-winning editorial cartoonist and columnist. You can check out his work at tedrawl.com. That's RALL.com. Gareth and Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Gareth, let's start with you. I'm looking and you can see what I'm holding here in the studio. Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy. That's the main headline. Of course, the Mueller probe was about this issue. I mean, of course, the critics of Donald Trump who were saying that Mueller was the great savior of our democracy are now not content with the findings. They're spinning it. We're going to play a few audio clips, but again, what's your big takeaway real briefly, then we'll take it to Ted, and I want to play some of these audio clips.
My big takeaway is that I think that the way in which this Mueller report has in fact turned out is going to have a serious effect of splitting the Democratic Party between those who are determined to keep up the fire about the alleged conspiracy with Russia over with Trump in Russia, and those who think we've got to move on. I think that's going to be a serious split within the Democratic Party, and I think we'll see the effects of that in the coming months.
Ted Rawl, I'm just seeing Lindsey Graham is now calling for the U.S. Congress to investigate the FBI, for the investigators to be investigated. Now that the report has come out that after 2.5 years, no evidence of collusion. Anyway, either the Democrats are going to keep going on all the other non-Russia related probes, or now the Republicans are going to say, look, Donald Trump was right. This was a witch hunt. Anyway, what's your takeaway real quick?
Lindsey Graham had better be careful to avoid making the same mistake the Democrats have been making for the last 2 years, which is overreaching. The Democrats, they've made a huge mistake. They've just greatly increased the chances of Trump being reelected next year. What they did is they took their eye off the ball of potentially impeachable offenses. Business corruption should have been the focus of Democrats looking for legal means to remove this president. That's the low-hanging fruit. That's where something actually happened. Instead, they went after the president for something that he didn't actually do. And so they look really foolish, and Trump is going to beat the Mueller report over the heads of the Democrats all throughout next year. And it's going to be hard for the Democrats to put this behind them. I just don't see how the Republicans are not going to benefit tremendously from this unless they decide to say, hey, we're now going to start investigating the Democrats. That would be foolish.
Journalist Matt Taibbi, who's been covering this story and who, like, Glenn Greenwald, Aaron Maté, Max Blumenthal, Gareth Porter, Joe Lauria, of course, I'm forgetting some people, but people here at Loud and Clear, our show, we've done this story over and over again, and we've been making the argument that there's no evidence yet of collusion. If there is evidence, we'll talk about it. But short of that, it appears to be a witch hunt. Here's what Matt Taibbi said. Nothing Trump is accused of from now on by the press will be believed by huge chunks of the population, a group that, perhaps thanks to this story, is now larger than his original base. As Baker notes, that's Peter Baker of the New York Times, a full 50.3% of respondents in a poll conducted this month said they agree with Trump that the Mueller probe is a, quote, witch hunt. Now, 50.3, larger than Trump's base, that number is going to go up. Go ahead, Gareth.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I think the problem that the people who have been putting forward the conspiracy theory are having here is that they insisted that every time they did a story that had to do with a meeting with the Russians, that is somehow, or somebody who was Russian or had contact with the Russians, that indicated that there was some sort of conspiracy. And this kind of thinking really took over in a way that's almost unprecedented in my recollection of political history and media history of the United States. You'd have to go back to the McCarthyite era, but nothing that I can recall even about McCarthyism was really quite the same as this kind of hysteria. And now I think, as I said, I think we're going to see a clear division between those who refuse to give up, the Rachel Maddows and the David Corns of the centrist liberal media, and most others who are going to begin to back off and try to change the subject, essentially, I think would be the general reaction of most in the media who took that position, and most of the people in the Democratic Party who believed in it, I think are now going to have to back away and at least listen to those who are saying this was a big mistake.
Ted, I want to ask you to comment on what Gareth just said here, because Gareth, I agree. I think that the Democrats have put themselves so close to this issue that they don't see that the damage that they're doing to themselves, that they want to perpetuate this, whether it's the investigation or the situation itself or whatever it is, they just want to perpetuate this constant air of crisis. And it seems already in these very early stages to be backfiring.
Before we hear Ted respond to you, John Kiriakou, let's listen to an audio clip from MSNBC.
Oh,
it's about 1 minute. I think this is all from, it's a compilation that somebody put together. It's all from one show. Of Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow.
I mean, it's cut and paste, but here, let's listen. About a minute long.
Russia. Russia, Vladimir Putin, Russia, Russia. Russia. Russia hates Russia. 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 Putin. Russia's Russia. 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 Russian. 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 Russia. Russia. Moscow. Moscow. Russia. Russian. Pro-Russian. Russian. Russia. Russian. 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 The Russians. Russian. Russian. Russia. Russians. Russians. Russia. Russian. 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 Russia. Russian. 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 Moscow. Russian. Russian. Russia. Putin. Russian. 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 Russian against us. Russians. Russians rush against the U.S. The Russians. Russia. Russia. Russian. Russian. The Russian government scheme. The Russians, Vladimir Putin, Russia. Vladimir Putin, Russia.
I think we get
enough already.
We're all starting to get dizzy here. Ted Rawl, that's all from That's one segment. I mean, and people are listening to Rachel Maddow every night, Monday through Friday. And again, it's been very good for MSNBC. They say they hate Trump, but I actually think it's been a career-changing event for Rachel Maddow and for MSNBC and CNN. They all love it, actually. I mean, there's this crass capitalist element of this whole thing. Go ahead.
It's infotainment, right? I mean, the idea is, you're a 24/7 news agency, and you need as much, you want as high ratings as possible because you're trying to sell ads. And I guess it's been working. I have to just say, parenthetically, I would like to echo kind of what Glenn Greenwald said in an interview to New York Magazine that came out yesterday about, you know, how it is sad to see what happened to Rachel Maddow. I mean, you know, for those of us who knew her, and I did, when she, back in the Air America days, she was a very bright, interesting, seemingly principled, progressive young woman who has degenerated into the most partisan hack. And it is just disgusting to see. I mean, it's kind of like if someone ever asks, like if my 14-year-old son says, "Dad, you know, what does it mean when they say, oh, that person sold out?" She's the first person who would come to my mind. She knows better. She knows it's not true. She's too smart to think it's true. And yet she's going on and on and on and on. And she gets very well paid for it. It's gross to see. And by the way, I think we ought to be careful about playing that clip because I'm worried I might develop epilepsy.
I know. There was more. I cut it off, by the way. I was only halfway through it, but I hadn't heard it myself. It was making us sick, actually. But it was real. It happened in that one segment of Rachel Maddow's show. Journalist Matt Taibbi says in this article, "It's official. Russiagate is this generation's WMD. The Iraq War faceplant damaged the reputation of the press. Russiagate has just destroyed it." And I was listening to Glenn Greenwald earlier on radio, who was quoting Matt Taibbi. Gareth Porter, you're an investigative journalist. You actually do the research. It's important to do research. It's important to actually have facts.
Yeah, and in this case, it seems to me that what is really left of the case that the Trump-Russia conspiracy people have been pushing for all these months, for 2 years now, the one thing that I think we're still going to see them harping away at in the coming days is the issue of Kalimnik, the Russian... You know, he has both Russian and non-Russian. He has dual citizenship, but he got his language skill in English from the Moscow Military Academy, and he got the notion was generalized around Moscow, where the IRI, the Republican International Institute, was operating, and he was part of it. They were kidding him about being a spy, and he was the kind of guy who would play along with it. And it became a whole thing that people generally sort of half kiddingly but half seriously regarded him as somebody who must have been GRU. And in fact, there's absolutely no reason to believe that he was spying for Russia ever.
No.
This whole idea that was used in one of the court filings from Mueller says that, you know, FBI assesses that he was had ties with Russian intelligence. Now, what that actually means, I'm quite certain, is that Peter Strzok had that assessment when he was still with the FBI and was the guy who was in touch with the Mueller investigation and who they were going to hire as the person to be their Russia specialist. And in the end, of course, that fell apart because of his romantic and other texting with his girlfriend. But there's no doubt that that was the origin of this. Now, you know, anybody who seriously analyzes that whole thing should be able to see that this doesn't hold up. But I think we're going to see in the coming days that that's going to be the last thing that they're going to hold on to and try to talk about.
We're going to come back after a short break and continue this discussion. And Gareth Porter is absolutely right. Whatever the genesis or the origin of it is, when you look at Trump administration's policies towards Russia, things have gotten a lot worse. It's a very aggressive, belligerent policy. We want to talk about the fallout because That's the Republican and Democratic and foreign policy establishment consensus, more or less. Anyway, we're going to talk about it more. We're speaking with Gareth Porter and Ted Royal after a short break. We'll be right back.
Loud and clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker.
And I'm John Kiriakou.
We continue our discussion on the Robert Mueller report on Russia-Trump collusion allegations. Again, the New York Times today, Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy. We're going to talk about that and what it means going forward. We're speaking in studio with Gareth Porter. He is a historian, investigative journalist, and analyst specializing in U.S. national security policy. We're also talking from New York with Ted Royal. Ted is an award-winning editorial cartoonist and columnist. You can check out his work at www.royal.com. Ted Royal, I want to play an audio clip. This is from this morning. It's Lindsey Graham, of course, a Republican senator from South Carolina, a Trump ally. But I think this is an indicator of what's coming next. Let's listen.
What happens next is that I have been talking since 2017, end of 2017, about the other side of the story. And nobody much appears to care, but I hope you will find some interest now, that the FISA warrant issued against Carter Page, based on a dossier prepared by Christopher Steele, is at a minimum disturbing. Whether or not it's illegal, I don't yet know. So I'm going to get answers to this.
Ted Royal, what we're talking about here, or what Lindsey Graham is talking about, is that the Christopher Steele dossier, which is unvetted assertions about Donald Trump, which are, for the most part, untrue, or maybe completely untrue, we don't know. They were used by the FBI to get a FISA warrant against Carter Page, who was for a while a Trump advisor. And it was also used to launch this larger investigation by the FBI against Trump and the Trump campaign. And that then, after James Comey was fired, became the basis for Robert Mueller's probe. Now, what Lindsey Graham is asserting, basically, is that this will be investigated by the Senate because Donald Trump has asserted from the beginning that it's a witch hunt, that it was a political exercise sort of camouflaged or masquerading as a legal or criminal proceeding. That's very likely now, it would seem to me, that that's where, if the Democrats want to keep going with anti-Trump probes of all types, Trump will say, well, it's a witch hunt. I've been vindicated. I'm exonerated. Why did this happen? It's a complete waste of the time of the money and time of the country. Anyway, where do you think this is going with the investigation of the investigators?
Well, I agree with you that that's definitely a strong possibility. I will just say parenthetically that to me, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court and thus all of its warrants are extremely problematic constitutionally. They are a rubber stamp court for the intelligence agencies, and they almost never rule against these requests. It's a complete kangaroo court. There's no one in the courtroom who tells this federal judge, who's the FISA judge for the purpose of these warrant requests, to say, hey, there's no one who argues against it to say, hey, there's not enough cause to issue it. There's only a request for it. The vast majority of them, overwhelmingly, I think it's like over 99% of them, are granted. So the FISA court is a huge violation of Americans' rights. And sounds to me like, Carter Page was one of those Americans whose rights were violated in this case, one of many Americans. And I guess, again, this would be like, be careful, Lindsey Graham. This might cause the whole FISA system to be called into question, although possibly not by the lickspittle mainstream corporate media, who are not likely to ever call that stuff into question, right? But overall, among progressives, among the American people, libertarians, left and right, this is a subject that is long and has long need of dire need of being addressed and, in my opinion, gotten rid of. So, but I do think that politically, there's going to be blowback here. I mean, the main goal is not going to be to hold Democrats legally accountable. The main goal is going to be to remind voters through a drip, drip, drip of stories that the Democrats messed up big time when they went after Trump on Russian collusion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm looking at Aaron Maté's article from March 12th, 2019. It's entitled A Skeptic's Guide to the Russiagate Fixation. Robert Mueller has yet to allege collusion, and Democrats who accuse Trump of being a Kremlin conspirator are silent when his policies escalate tensions with Russia. That's Aaron Mate. But, you know, again, we have different elements of this, Gareth. We have the sort of basically the unconstitutionality of the way the FISA court works. Then the political vendetta organized by the FBI against Trump, the Democrats are using this as their ticket. And it just reminds me, and I was talking about this at our editorial meeting this morning, when Trump was elected, progressive activism took off. People were in the streets. We were at the airports against the Muslim ban. I mean, I'm not talking about Soros-funded protests. I'm talking about the people in the United States in large numbers, many of them who had never protested before. They were in the streets. And yet that kind of street-level grassroots resistance was basically eviscerated over the next few months and replaced by all of these same activists being spectators, watching congressional investigations in the Mueller probe and becoming the cheerleaders for the FBI. And now you have Donald Trump basically stronger and emboldened. I mean, the potential for having a genuinely progressive anti-Trump resistance in many ways has not only turned into its opposite, it actually strengthens Trump.
Well, that's true. And I want to just come back to the other side of what Lindsey Graham was talking about, or at least what it appeared from the start he was talking about, which is investigating the FBI, because it seems to me that that's really what we do need in this country. We do need to have an investigation of the FBI and its role in creating this Russiagate conspiracy theory. The fact that, it should be the CIA too, but I think the FBI bears even greater responsibility for obvious reasons. And you go back to the interaction between senior FBI officials and this whole Steele dossier. I mean, it's a huge scandal. We now know that these senior FBI officials were aware of the true nature of the origins of that dossier. They knew that it was sponsored by GPS Fusion. It was being handled by and funded by GPS Fusion.
Research and opposition against Trump.
It was research opposition. And they were warned that Steele was, they were warned by Bruce Orr, that Steele was a hardcore political opponent of Trump. He had expressed that openly in a conversation with Bruce Orr. And so there are all kinds of ways, I haven't even begun to talk about what happened later, that the FBI senior officials stand to be held accountable for their behavior in creating this thing. And then, of course, it ends up in April, May of 2017, with these same senior officials trying to come up with a basis or to justify a criminal or counterintelligence investigation of Trump himself based on the idea that he was a traitor, that he was serving as a stooge for the Russian government. Mm-hmm. So there is a huge question here that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, John, I agree too.
I agree.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Like Lindsey Graham, obviously, we're not Republicans. We're not supporters of Lindsey Graham. But Gareth Porter is right. The FBI should be investigated. It's not of, by, and for the FBI. It's not of, by, and for intelligence agencies.
I agree completely. The FBI should be investigated. You know, at the very least, we got a glimpse of what the FBI does behind closed doors with the Peter Stroke revelations. That in and of itself should have warranted an investigation. Well, I can give a reporter stories about what the FBI has done to me. I'm sure Jeffrey Sterling can do the same thing, and Terry Albury and any other whistleblower. So yeah, there are a million different reasons that the FBI should be investigated. And you know, Democrats ought not to forget too that Republicans still control the United States Senate. And if the Democrats want to have investigations and hearings in the House, the Republicans can do exactly the same thing on the Senate side, and then we're even more paralyzed than we are now.
Ted Rall, you know, progressives were very happy about the Church Committee hearings that investigated FBI abuse, the COINTEL program, the counterintelligence program that targeted Dr. King and the Black Panther Party and the anti-war movement and the women's movement and the socialist movement. We were happy to have the FBI sort of abuse and misconduct exposed. But then again, some big section of the liberal community became the cheerleaders for Robert Mueller and James Comey. these guys who have a terrible record as the head of the FBI, rounding up Muslims, depriving people of civil rights, carrying out surveillance against the Occupy movement, against the anti-war movement. People stopped thinking. They stopped thinking and became swept up in the witch hunt.
Yeah.
I want to, again, we can't ignore the role of the media here, because people have to not just watch TV every night at MSNBC and think you're getting something other than propaganda. Let's listen to this audio tape. It's Chris Hayes talking about Donald Trump on MSNBC interviewing Jonathan Chait. This was in July 2018. Let's listen.
It sounds insane. I just want to say, it really does. Like, the idea that he goes to Moscow in 87, is cultivated as a Russian intelligence asset and is this sort of like sleeper cell for decades sounds nuts. It sounds like the stuff of conspiracy theories. Why are you not insane?
So that's a great question, Chris. I get that all the time. So first of all, the piece acknowledges that that is probably not true, but it might be. And one of the reasons I wrote this is you need to take seriously some of these low probability, high impact scenarios. You know, before the election, sort of everyone heard that Hillary Clinton had about an 80% chance of winning. And we all just treated it like that meant 100% and didn't think about what would that 20% alternative really mean. So that's part of what I'm doing with this, with aspects of this piece, like this trip to Moscow. You know, what would it mean if it really went that deep?
Yeah, Trump's been an asset since 87. They've been carefully planning. It was during the Soviet era. The Soviet Communist Party had a plan. Let's elect Donald Trump in 38 years.
Yes, exactly.
And this is how we're going to do it.
Well, it's just like Barack Obama's birth certificate. Let's make it look like he was born in the United States, so 50 years from now, he can be elected president.
Yeah. And Jonathan Chait, for people who don't know, is an American commentator and writer for New York Magazine. Go ahead, Ted Rall.
Well, you know, this is how an example, a classic example of how people have learned not to think right anymore. If you want the ultimate high impact, low probability scenario, it's that the Earth is flat. It just isn't true. It would have a great deal of impact. I mean, it would really change a lot of things, and it probably is something we should cover at length, because that would really change the world, right? So, it's so absurd. It's so silly.
Somebody should do a cartoon on that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Do we know any cartoonists?
But I want to get back to something that, we talked about a little bit earlier. You know, how are the Democrats, the split between the corporate Democrats, the former who supported Hillary Clinton, and the progressive, the ascendant progressives who supported Bernie, how is this going to play out? How are the corporate Democrats going to try to rescue their narrative? And I'm already seeing it on social media now. They're talking about if there was nothing to the Mueller probe, why were there 37 people charged, right? And it's it's because if the police pull you over looking for Russian collusion, and then they go through your seat cushions in your glove compartment, and they happen to find some taxes you didn't pay, some money that you laundered, they arrest you, and they have the right to do that. But it doesn't mean that they found collusion.
Amen.
Right, the presumption of innocence.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that idea.
Right.
And, the New York Times, when they knew that the Mueller report was going to be nothing, last week they said, what do we already know about the Mueller probe? So it was like everything plus the kitchen sink. So 13 and Michael Flynn found guilty, so-and-so collaborating, Paul Manafort in jail, 13 Russians from the Internet Research Agency indicted. Well, again, this is a clickbait company, right? They took out $100,000 of Facebook ads, 56% of which came after November 8th, very few of which mentioned any of the candidates, none of which got much of a following. And you have a situation where the Trump campaign just by itself spent $90 million on social media. So this obvious drop in the bucket from an internet research agency. If the Russian government was actually trying to have an impact on the American electoral process, I just don't think this would be the way they would do it. I mean, what would be the point? You have 56% of the Facebook ads.
That's right.
After the election. And some of them are about, some of them are pro-gun rights and some of them are anti-gun rights. I mean, again, the story was a conspiracy theory that on its face didn't make any sense, right? And again, the Democrats might have made this argument, Gareth. They might have made this argument. We didn't lose the election. We won the popular vote by 3.2 million votes. We lost the Electoral College vote. The Electoral College is an arcane system that was developed in the slave in the days of slavery to handle proportions. And Hillary Clinton should have maybe gone once at least to one of those battleground states like Wisconsin. But instead of these obvious things, they decided on Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. Now you have Donald Trump. I just wonder what your attitude is. Trump has been much more aggressive than Obama against Russia. Is it that the Democrats and the Republicans, but especially the Democrats' mantra about him being a Russian agent has made it more likely that Donald Trump will embrace the hardline positions of Bolton and Pompeo against Russia?
Sure.
I mean, is that part of it?
Absolutely. And by the way, I do believe that it is highly likely now that the Democrats, certainly in Congress and probably, you know, the party leadership itself, will in fact begin to focus on the non-Russia aspect of the Trump investigation, of the Mueller investigation of Trump. Obviously, that is the only way that they can adjust to this with a minimum of loss of face and loss of political confidence in the part of the population. So it's obvious that they are going to do this, and that will at least help somewhat to assuage the loss of face that obviously this political leadership has experienced. But I think the media has a much more serious problem because of their role in this.
Yeah. Again, the big loser here, even as Trump is exonerated, the big loser is U.S.-Russian relations, because the Mueller report says there was collusion. There was an attempt by the Russian government to interfere, because as Colleen Raleigh told us earlier, Mueller is a political animal. If he says, yeah, of course the Russians tried to interfere in the election, but there was no actual collusion with the Trump campaign, that way he can get away with trying to prove something that's not provable, that there was collusion, but he can still assert something which is basically accepted in the public mind, that Russia really was the agency that hacked the DNC, that Russia really was trying to interfere with the U.S. elections, that the Russian government was trying to have this major impact. And as a consequence, even if Trump is emboldened here, which he is, and stronger, which he is, U.S.-Russian relations are not going to be stronger. They're going to be going south for a long time.
Well, that's absolutely right. I agree with you, Brian. And I would just say that the problem we have here is that we have not really done the kind of analysis, we have not seen in the media the kind of analysis of, you know, Russian policy and its impact on the United States and the whole question of what is U.S. democracy and how has it been impacted by this whole thing. We have to have a much more comprehensive analysis that shows that whatever the Russians tried to do, you know, presumably they wanted to have some impact on the election in some fashion, but the reality is that whatever they wanted to do, it could not have changed the ultimate result of this election. There is not one iota of evidence that a single vote was actually changed. And that I think is what is missing in the entire storyline.
Ted Rall, there's other consequences too. U.S.-Russian relations are important, the two most important thermonuclear powers. I mean, peace-loving people and people who wanted justice and who were anti-war historically favored good relations. Now you have a big part of the Democratic Party base actually sounding like Ronald Reagan Republicans when it comes to relations. I mean, the early Reagan. There's other consequences too. Marina Butina, she's still in jail. She's here. I think she's still in solitary confinement. I'm not sure, but she's been in jail for 6 months. I think, John, it's for conspiracy to fail to sign a form.
That's right.
Basically.
Which is literally what she did. She did not sign a form, an online form, indicating that she was working on behalf of a foreign government.
And she also asserts that she wasn't.
I was just going to say those exact same words. She's always maintained that she was not working on behalf of a foreign government. She was very clear about what she was doing here while attending graduate school at American University. She's a gun rights activist. She was making relationships, trying to create relationships with the National Rifle Association. She was not being told to do that by the Russian government, but they came down on her like a ton of bricks anyway, thinking that they could flip her and she would testify against somebody who would then testify against somebody and end up putting the president, in front of an impeachment hearing. And that none of that ever happened.
John, I think it's time to really have a very focused inquiry into the question of criminalization of working for more amicable relations between the United States and Russia.
That's really what this comes down to.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ted Rall.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it must be absolutely galling when her attorney comes in to meet with her and tells her what transpired with this report. I also feel some sympathy for even some of the Trump officials who were swept up in this witch hunt, in this probe. You know, even like, the way I look at it, the Paul Manafort's of the world is they should have been gone after for what they actually did. They shouldn't have been swept up peripherally. I don't even think it should be legal. I think if you're the target of an investigation over a certain category of crime and they happen to discover that you did something else, you shouldn't be able to be prosecuted for that. I know there's a lot of case law that establishes that you should be, that you can be, but it feels gross. It feels wrong, and it feels like it encourages governmental and police authorities to conduct dragnets and to do expansive searches and investigations that they know can turn up something. I mean, everyone's done something wrong, right? There's a lot of laws.
John Kiriakou, you've talked about that. If they go at people long enough,
they're going to get you.
There's three. We all commit three felonies a day.
Dr. Harvey Silverglade.
What time is it? I don't even.
Yeah. Dr. Harvey Silverglade, a Harvard law professor, wrote a book called Three Felonies a Day. We've talked about it on the show, saying that we are so over-criminalized, so over-regulated in this country that the average American on the average day going about his or her normal business commits three felonies, with the bottom line being if they want to get you, they're going to get you. And I think we saw exactly that with these 37 or whatever it was indictments in this case. And remember,
none of them are about collusion.
No, none of them are about collusion. They're all process felonies, making a false statement, conspiracy, obstruction of a congressional process or something. I never even heard of that
and
crime.
There is, and the first one, that the first person to go down, right, was Michael Flynn.
That's right.
For lying to the FBI on January 24th when they convinced him that they wanted to come over. Comey convinced them, hey, let's come over and have
all
a chat.
On the same team.
We're on the same team. Oh, no, Mike, you don't need a lawyer. That'll slow the things down.
They specifically told him
don't have a lawyer. They knew what he had said in his discussions with the Russian ambassador, Gareth. They knew what he had already said. They had the transcript. So they weren't trying to learn something from Michael Flynn. They were trying to trick Michael Flynn. And what they had on Michael Flynn was a discussion with the Russian ambassador, not before, but after the election in December 22nd, 2016, Ambassador Kislyak from Moscow here in Washington, on behalf of Israel. The Israelis wanted the Russians to vote no on a UN Security Council resolution that would have condemned Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And Obama said, we're going to abstain. So the Israelis were freaking out. So there was interference. It was from Israel. And Flynn called Kislyak. And then stupidly, somehow, either by omission or commission, might not have been stupid, just he could have made a mistake, he didn't tell the FBI exactly what he said to Kislyak.
Right. And just to add a small sort of asterisk to that point, what he said, apparently, from the reporting in the Washington Post about Russia, about the question of whether sanctions came up, it was apparently not clear that they regarded that as an actual lie, because what he said, he defended his position in that conversation by saying that, well, he talked about the fact that the Russians had been expelled, and that, strictly speaking, may not be a matter of sanctions.
Yeah, that was the second conversation. So he spoke to Kislyak, this is Michael Flynn, once on December 22nd. The second conversation was December 29th, the day after Obama imposed sanctions. he called the Russian ambassador and he said to him, look, we hope that you don't retaliate greater than what's been done to you, in essence. Don't over retaliate, meaning these new sanctions and the expulsion of Russians in between when Trump won and when Trump was going to take office. Like, let's not overdo it.
Don't
overreact. This is, Ted Rall, going back to your point, that actually isn't criminal. What Michael Flynn was taken down by the FBI knowingly as part of this larger effort. And this was even before the Mueller probe, because the Mueller probe only started officially after Comey was fired, right? That was in May. So the FBI was looking for ways to bring down the Trump or the Trump cabinet. That's what we actually have. So in that sense, Donald Trump is going to be able to go to his base and to others and say, look, I was telling the truth and my accusers were lying. We have 90 seconds left.
That's the piece of it. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Donald Trump has been accused of lying thousands of times in the media and has lied many, many, many times. But he's going to come out of this. Arguably one of the greatest political liars in American political history is going to come out of this smelling like roses because of the idiot Democrats and their idiotic deep state allies in the FBI and elsewhere in the intelligence community who, I mean, you know, the thing is that's most appalling from my point of view is the fact that as Brian, as you pointed out a little while ago, everybody could see this was BS from the very beginning. You had to be an idiot to think there was anything to it. And it's so it was clear. You know what I mean? It's just not one of those things where it's like, well, it really did look like he was guilty. You know, I mean, it's like the congressman who was accused of killing Chandra Levy. It really, he did look guilty. He acted guilty. He could have done it. It's really like breathtaking that he was actually innocent, right? He really didn't do it. Nobody, this isn't like one of those things. You know, this is like, we knew it was BS from the start. We said it was BS from the start. We all said it over and over and over. They shouted over. And now they still won't admit they were wrong. And they all keep their jobs. It's incredible.
As we go out, I would make one little minor friendly amendment to your point, which is you have to be an idiot or you have to treat the Russia witch hunt investigation as a religious article of faith. Now, that could be conflated with idiocy. But in other words, people really actually just believe. And when you just believe, you don't need evidence. You just believe. Anyway, we're out of time. We were joined by Gareth Porter here in the studio. He is a historian, an investigative journalist, and analyst specializing in U.S. national security policy. We're joined from New York by Ted Rall, an award-winning editorial cartoonist and columnist. You can check out his work at www.rall.com. That's RALL.com. You've been listening to Loud and Clear. Be sure to go to our Facebook page, Loud and Clear with Brian Becker, for daily updates. If you enjoy the show and you want your friends to hear it, let us know by liking the page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter at Loud Clear Radio. In the Washington, D.C. area, you can hear us every day, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 6 p.m. at 105.5 FM and at 1390 AM. You can also hear us at SputnikNews.com and as a podcast at iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and Spotify. Remember, telling the truth is important, but to make a difference, it has to be loud and clear. Stay tuned to Radio Sputnik.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.